So now I invite Brother Mac forward to give his second class on the Apostle Paul's friends.
And so, brothers and sisters, you'll remember that my subject of last week was to consider an interview and walk and talk with some of the disciples of the Apostle Paul. It would be lovely if you could just drop in between men like the Apostle Paul and Timothy, Barnabas and all those, and just listen to their conversation. It must have been wonderful how they would be discussing the welfare of the ecclesia, the progress of the word being preached throughout the country at that time, the consideration of what they have to contend with, and all these things. And I'm sure that in some silent area, sitting underneath a tree, they will all bow their heads and link our hands and find strength in praying with each other. So the conversation would go in that direction. I feel always on a spiritual level. It must have been beautiful. The conversation of our world today on an international scale is on one subject. It has been that way for many months now, almost 2 years. It doesn't matter wherever you go in the world or whatever place you walk in your own city, the conversation will always turn to this subject and this a problem of a terrible disease that we have at this time going throughout the cities and the towns. But we always, being a Bible student and the consideration of those who have been called unto Christ, we also remember there is another terrible disease present throughout the world, and especially in the ecclesia world, and that is one of loneliness. I always remember as a young man that talking to my father when he was living on the prairies in a log cabin, and he would tell me that I mentioned the fact it must have been a very lonely experience. And he was fortunate to be able to share the log cabin with a Scottish pioneer that went out there in 1897. But he said loneliness was a terrible thing. He said some of the old pioneers that went out, they figured that they could deal with life on their own. They didn't need any association. They didn't need any friendship. And they were strong enough to deal with it. The outcome was, because of the loneliness of their cabin, especially in the winter time, they got, as he told me, they got cabin fever. And they just went in time. They were found talking to themselves at all times. And it was a bit of a serious issue when they answered themselves. And that was not too good. But anyhow, this was the way it was in that particular time. And so there was this problem of loneliness. And we've all felt loneliness in our lives at some time, and we can bring those events forward. And you can tell me of the time when you were very lonely, and if it wasn't for your God in heaven, then you would be a very, very lonely person, and it could affect your life and your well-being. And so just to catch up with what we said of last week, some of the comments that we said last week, we made the proclamation at the beginning of our talk that in the very beginning, God made this arrangement for friendship. He saw the need for it, he saw the essence of it, and he realized that without a partnership, without a friend, life would be very, very difficult. And so you remember that created Adam from the dust of the earth. And so then he arranged for it that he would have help meet. And that is a strong word, help meet, to help him just the experience of talking with each other, discussing things, leaning upon each other, and bowing their heads with one another to talk to the greatest friend of all, and that is God. God is a friend. God can be a friend of you at any time that you want to draw nigh unto him and seek him in the moment of prayer. And so we remember, do we not? I think it's beautiful that when we go to the Apostle James, the apostle is a very man who was very personal. And in his writings, we see how he gets to the depth of different problems and difficulties that individuals have and ecclesias have. But he recommended Abraham. And it was said of Abraham, Abraham was the friend of God. And we take that for granted and very lighthearted. But when you think about it and look into its depths, Abraham was a friend of God. Now you couldn't have any higher friendship than that. Than the God, the great creator, the only true and living God, has condescended to accept your attention and your appeal to be his friend. So I think it's beautiful, and we know that we quickly drew from that of Abraham to other incidents in the Old Testament of beautiful friendships. And we spoke there, as we learned in our Sunday school day, of David and Jonathan. Sacrifices come with friendship. And we know this was the case with Jonathan. Jonathan loved David so much and accepted and appreciated his friendship that he said that he would be willing to give up his crown, give up his kingship for his friend. How more beautiful and strong a friendship can we have than that? And then we move from the Old Testament. We dealt with, as we know, Ruth and Naomi. And then we moved into the New Testament, and we drew again on that beautiful scene, a wonderful friendship, a beautiful dedication to friendship, a sacrifice to friendship, and to go all lengths to show the friendship, to express that action which would bring about a true fellowship. There's friendships, and they're true friendships. It's a true friendship that we seek after. It was a true friendship that Abraham with God, and it should be the same with us. And we record that we not, and we can't stop being mesmerized by the friendship of Mary and Elizabeth. Elizabeth demonstrated the fullness of her friendship. I think it's wonderful. Yeah, we're asked to do little things for some friends, and we may, maybe it's not, I don't know, it's not quite convenient to do it, and maybe you can look at it this way. When Mary realized that Elizabeth was with child, she dropped everything. This is friendship. She dropped everything, and she was willing to go 70 miles, walk, riding on the donkey. She was also in the state of pregnancy and a childbearing, and she went to be with her dear friend Elizabeth. And so the consideration of the Apostle Paul's letters shows of those loved ones and whom he adopted and was willing to be called, even in some cases, sons in the faith. I remember, speaking of friendship, I remember years ago, a brother came in and stayed with us for some time. And he'd been to Victoria quite a few times. And there was a restriction on him by the government. You can only come into Canada so many times, but because of your age and everything else, you're not allowed to come. And we took him out to the airport to catch a plane. And he started to speak of how he'd appreciated the friendship that he had in Victoria and how much it meant to him and how disappointed he was that he wanted to live here and stay with us. But the government said no. So we assembled in the foyer of the airport, and there was a moment for prayer. There was about 10 of us. There was a moment for prayer. And we prayed, thanking God for having known this brother. And at the conclusion of the moment for our prayer, his brother just broke out in tears. And he was a strong man. He was a man who had been difficulties in his own life. but he was like a child weeping. And I thought there somewhere our ecclesia had invited this man into our lives, made friends of him, and now he was expressing his love and his appreciation for him. So immediately we remembered, did we not? The Apostle Paul, remember on one occasion when he was departed from his brother and sister, he said, let us go to the seashore. Remember that in Acts? And their mother and the children were there. They were all united. They had the friendship of this man, this apostle. And they knelt down and prayed. And we're told there that the people wept. How beautiful that was. This is the friendship that we have to achieve or try to achieve if we are to survive in this life. Now, there was also talking of brethren, and I've been in my own lifetime being influenced a lot by brethren, both young and old. I've also tried to understand all the scriptures, especially with the Acts of the Apostles and the Apostles' letters. I talked to one brother sometime when I was in England, talking about being able to get to the depths of the scriptures. And he said to me, and I'm sure I've overdone it more than once, he said to me, Brother Mac, read between the lines. He said, read between the lines. And I've done that, and I've found a lot of help by it, but all been going into trouble because I have a tendency to maybe go read into between the lines a bit more that's in there. Now, brothers and sisters, what I want you to realize, I think when we read the Acts of the Apostles, if we want to get the true story, if we want to get the depth of it, we have to read between the lines and go back in time. We don't do that. We don't do that. When we read the Acts of the Apostles, when we read the scriptures, we're still in the 21st century or where we are now, we're in that way. But what we have to do, if we want to get the depth of the events recorded in the Acts of the Apostles anywhere, we have to read between the lines and we have to see history as it was. When the Apostle Paul and Philip and all those went out preaching, it was not a quiet city like Victoria. It wasn't like that. When the Apostle Paul, Philip, and all those went out, the whole world was upside down. The world was on fire. Because what happened in Jerusalem and Rome, there were men and women, going about, and they were stirring up the philosophers of the day. They were stirring up the teachings in the schools. They were tearing up the preaching in the synagogue and in the churches. And the whole world was on fire. So we have to realize, so now these men of Paul and these brothers and sisters, they're moving in this atmosphere. It's not a quiet go to church on Sunday, listen to the brother and then trot off home and go and have lunch somewhere. It wasn't like that. It was an upbeat, spiritual upbeat to the extent that wherever they moved and whatever they said and wherever they go and they talked to their neighbors, people were talking about not COVID-19. They were talking about this Jesus the Christ. And what right have you come in to tell here that our Jews are no more the first class people? What right have you got to come and tell us that things have changed now? The Old Testament, the Old Covenant is done away with. It's been fulfilled. It was a school teacher to bring you unto Christ. We are hearing now about this Jesus the Christ. And this was the name that was on the lips of these men, friends of the Apostle Paul. So this is what I want you to try to do, and especially for the younger ones especially. I was never taught this, and I think I missed out of it. But I was taught to study the scripture. But nobody ever said to me, yeah, but you gotta get right between those lines. And if you get between those lines, you'll see a picture. And that picture will tell you what you're reading. And then it will come alive and mean more to you and you'll be able to be stronger for it. Now, you remember last week we dealt with friends, and we mentioned the fact that God is first the greatest friend that we can have. Then we mentioned Jesus Christ, didn't we? And we all know the famous saying of Jesus Christ, that he is a brother greater than a friend. If we walk with Jesus, we will never stray. If we walk with Jesus, we shall find the kingdom. But if we don't, we're going to wander off. As I was reading in the Christian magazine, we would be like sheep gone astray and lose out on the benefit of belonging into green pastures. And so we have God, we have Jesus Christ, and then we have the Apostle Paul on the road to Damascus. And these are, like, mentioned last week, and I will mention it again, because I feel that sometimes we underestimate and lose sight of the ordinary brother and sister. We dwell on Paul, we dwell on Ananias, we dwell on Barnabas, we dwell on Timothy. But how about that brother and sister with their children in the houses as Jesus traveled down the road and said, go into that house, smash the door down, and drag those people out. They are that sinew which binds together those who are strong. And that's what, it wasn't Ananias who converted the Apostle Paul. It was that brother and sister in the house with his children. And those children sat there as quiet as the mother and father, because they had learned to obey their parents and to know that their parents would look after them. So putting all this aside, we now draw our attention to another friend of the Apostle Paul. And that friend is one that I've always admired for more reasons than one. And that one is Barnabas. Most of us know quite a bit about Barnabas, because he quickly joins into the friendship with the Apostle Paul, and plays a big part with the Apostle Paul. There are not many people like the Apostle Paul. There are not many people like the Apostle Paul when his name was Saul, because he was intent on bringing all those who were followers of Jesus to justice. But Barnabas, who we know as a man, though he was against odds, he saw with the Apostle Paul the one called to be an apostle unto the Gentiles. He committed himself to God. And this is another lesson for us. Whatever God says, we should obey it, even if we think it's not the most convenient thing to do. And so this was the case with Barnabas, as we remember. So let's go into, we'll be going into Acts most of the time, maybe. So if you like to turn, most of you are familiar with the scenes in the Acts of the Apostles, but should you care to turn your pages, we'll go into the Acts of the Apostles, or the Acts of the Apostles with a call, or on some commentaries, they call it the further Acts of the Apostles. So Acts chapter 4, the 35, we read this. Okay. We're into chapter 4, and then it speaks about what I'm trying to get you to zoom in on. Oh, I should use that word. I should zoom in on this, the situation the way it was in Jerusalem and in other parts. Verse 33 says, and with great power gave the apostles witness of the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and great grace was upon him. Neither was there any among them that lacked, for as many as were possessors of lands of houses sold them, and brought the prices of the things that were sold. They laid them down at the apostles' feet, and distribution was made unto every man according as he had need. And Joseph, who by the apostles was surnamed Barnabas, which is interpreted the son of consolation or exhortation, a Levite, notice that he was a Levite, and he was of the country of Cyprus. having land, sold it and brought the money and laid it at the apostles' feet. So what we see here with this man who was at one time called Joseph or Joseph, he was named by the brothers and sisters. I think this is remarkable. I'm sure some brethren are called Brother Mac by a different name, which I don't want to mention at this time. But it was the way it was in those days. They called people, they gave people nicknames. You can go into the New Testament and see this, where the original name is not used of an individual, but they're given a nickname. And this was the same with this man. And it suited him. He was called Joseph. I'm sure his parents gave him them, hoping that he would be a Joseph. But the brethren said, no, he's not Joseph. He's a great giver. He's willing to share what he has with others. He can get up on a Saturday and he can preach to the people in his town. It's like a brother in England. He got up and gave a stronger exhortation than I gave a few weeks ago. And the ecclesia were there and they listened to him. And afterwards they said, that brother shouldn't get up and preach like that. And somebody said, that brother can get up and preach like that, because what he says, what he told us to do, he did himself 100%. And that was the way with Barnabas at this time. Barnabas that way. He was in this particular way of doing that. So, brothers and sisters, we'll talk a little bit about Barnabas this time. Now, there is a saying in the scriptures that comes out of the New Testament. Regarding Jesus being the faithful one. But talking about Barnabas, we'll dwell with Barnabas for a little longer. And remember in that chapter 4 that I read, he said he was of Cyprus. So Barnabas was a native of Cyprus, as we mentioned in that verse. And the disciples in Jerusalem were suspicious of this convert of the apostle Paul, who we call Saul. But we know that Barnabas, what I love about this study, and that is, it has told me that if you need a friend, you have problems and you have difficulties. If you need a friend, God's going to give it to you. God's going to find one to help you in the difficult hour, because he knows you can't do it on your own. Just the same as Adam couldn't do it on her own. Just the same as Elizabeth couldn't do it on her own. We need this companionship. We need this friendship. And so we have with Barnabas, who's a Levite. We remember that Barnabas were there to introduce this apostle Paul. Let's go to we remember the Levites were not they're not blessed financially from the Lord. They didn't gain any benefit from the law of Moses. So what did they do? They bought property outside the land. They bought property outside their land, so Barnabas had become a very wealthy man in doing this. And later on, he was sent, as we know, to join the company at Antioch to preach to the Jews and the Hellenists and the Greeks. But we dwell a bit, story, a few things I want to leave out concerning this man, a few things I want to put into it. Let's go. If you go to Luke 18, do we see this man Barnabas there? I just, most of you may be aware of this little study in Luke at this time concerning this man. When you go to Luke 18, there's one spoken of who came to Jesus. And the reason I mention it, I want you to, speaking of Barnabas, that he was a wealthy man, but he wasn't a man who, as we know, built barns and considered building more barns. He was the man who would share his wealth. And so when we go into Luke 18 and verse 18, it says this, "And a certain ruler asked him, saying, certain ruler, good master, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? I've got everything. I'm giving to the poor. What shall I do more to inherit eternal life? And Jesus said unto him, why do you call me good? Why do you call me good? None is good save one, that is God. Thou knowest the commandments." And so he reminds this man at this time, this one who's talking to Jesus. "And thou knowest the commandments, do not commit adultery, do not kill, do not steal, do not bear false witness, honor thy father and thy mother. And he said very proudly, Lord, I do all those right from my youth. All these have I kept from my youth up. My parents taught me, I religiously do all those, I follow through and check with them at the end of every day that I'm doing now. Now when Jesus heard these things, he said unto him, yet lackest thou one thing. And he looked to Jesus and said, no, Jesus, I've done them all. And Jesus said, no, you haven't. You're a rich man. You've got a stumbling block. You built a wall between you and your God. Sell all that thou hast and distribute unto the poor, and thou shalt have treasure in heaven, and come follow me. And when he heard this, he was very sorrowful, for he was very rich. And when Jesus saw that he was sorrowful, he said, how hardly shall they that have riches enter into the kingdom of God? And so I believe, and most commentaries believe, that this was Barnabas. Barnabas had been following Jesus around and listening to this Jesus and was impressed with him. And so he comes to Jesus and said, I hear, Lord, I hear you preaching about the kingdom of God coming on the earth. I hear what's in store for those who belong to it. I want to go there right now. Okay, so I'll give you a list. These things have I done. These things. And Jesus said, well done, my son. Well done. You're a good student. But he said, but to fulfill the two commandments, thou shalt love the Lord thy God as thyself, and your neighbor yourself, then get rid of that stumbling block that's built between you and your God. Sell your money. I don't sell your money. Give your money away. Help the neighbors. Help the poor. That is what a true Christian is. That is what a true follower of Jesus Christ is, as he tells us at this time. So it may be interesting. I'm sure that most of you may be aware of that little thing at this time. So in Acts 11 and verse 12, we're told that Barnabas was one of the men of Cyprus, one of those that had gone out preaching in this way. And in where we go to Acts chapter 11, and we have many friends, the Apostle Paul, and I'm not going to be able to deal with them all tonight because I want to dwell a little further with Barnabas, Acts 11, verse 12. And it says there, and this, verse 12. And behold, immediately there were three men already coming to the house. So you know all that event there. And the Spirit made me go with them. Those six men accompanied me, and we entered into his house, and we continue in that way. Now we go down to verse 19. Now they which were scattered abroad upon the persecution. So you see how things are just throbbing at this time. The brethren and sisters being scattered into all other parts. And it was a good thing that they were doing, because the truth was being spread in this way. Now when they were scattered abroad upon the persecution that arose about Stephen, traveled as far as Phoenix and Cyprus. So Cyprus, Barnabas was a, as we know, a Levite and of Cyprus. So he would be in that little quote there, and Cyprus and Antioch, preaching the word to none but unto the Jews. And some of them women of Cyprus, Barnabas, and so many others in this particular way. And so we see then that Barnabas was now a true follower of Jesus Christ. And we go down to verse 25. Then departed Barnabas to Tarsus, but to seek Saul. Nobody else would go. No, I'm not going to that man. That Saul, he's a persecutor of the church. My neighbors were dragged into court by this man Saul. I'm not going there. But we know that Barnabas now was a true believer. He knew, as God taught to him, of what he must do. And so they sent Barnabas to Antioch that way. And then, as we know later on, his association with Paul grew. He went down to Antioch and to Tarsus and to find the Apostle Paul, and they continued from time to time in this fellowship. Now, we don't hear much of the Apostle Paul for 9 years. He stayed in Antioch for one year, and the friendship grew. And it was a time, as I say, I'm trying to build up the condition of the world at that time. It was not what we call a sophy world. This was an energetic world, and the brothers and sisters had to confront it. Because even at this time, in AD 45 to 50, we know that Claudius Caesar had come to be the new emperor. And with it came a famine. A famine. We have COVID-19. They had a famine where families were starving and many things were distress. So Paul, as we know, Paul and Barnabas were appointed to deliver funds, the different ecclesias, collective funds, and they were to deliver funds to these different brothers and sisters, especially in Jerusalem. Just like we do today, brothers and sisters, with our missionary work, many fine brothers and sisters are involved in this, and they're doing the same thing. And these people are not alone starving physically, but also spiritually, because they needed the attention of other friends. So in Acts 15, verse 35, we read this. You know that we've had the conference in Jerusalem. Things are moving along. The preaching must continue from there. And now Paul is with Barnabas. And it says in verse 35, Paul also and Barnabas continued in Antioch, teaching and preaching the word of the Lord with many others also. Lots of. One place it talks about a multitude of people. A multitude of people. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we have, in Victoria, we could have 10 or 15 out on a Sunday evening to be able to preach to them. But this was it, so much alive at this particular time. And some days after, Paul said unto Barnabas, let us go again and visit our brethren in every city where we have preached the word of the Lord. And let's see how they do. Go back. And Barnabas determined to take with him John, whose surname was Mark. But Paul thought not good to take him with them, who departed them from Pamphylia and went not with them to work. So there's a bit of a contention between, and I want to emphasize at this time that a real strong friendship is not always smooth, because you've got two individuals with two different types of characters, and so it doesn't always work. But what has to work is the incident. If there's a difficulty between the two, it has to be resolved. And true friendship will resolve that, and that friendship will become stronger. So this is what it was. The contention was so sharp between them that they departed asunder one from the other. And so Barnabas took Mark and sailed unto Cyprus. That was the trouble with the Apostle Paul at this time. I wouldn't have disagreed with the Apostle Paul. I would have gone along with him regardless. And so Margan sailed on to Cyprus, and Paul chose Silas and departed, being recommended by the brethren unto the grace of God. And so this is held and continued in this particular way at this time. Paul was not happy with the way things were going at this particular time. And so it is, my brothers and sisters, I wanted to talk about Timothy tonight, and I wanted to talk about Luke. And because of time, I think I'm going to bypass Timothy and talk about Luke. But still continuing on my last thoughts regarding division with a friendship, there is a beautiful saying in the Proverbs. And the saying is, faithful are the wounds of a friend. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. They're not destructive, these wounds. It may come about a disagreement or some emotional thing, but they are faithful. By that action, they're not out to destroy a person, to hurt a person. It's just that things just don't melt together at that particular time. And we remember, do we not? The apostles, they hurt Jesus many times. Jesus was their best friend, and they hurt him many times. Jesus wept more times than is recorded in the scriptures. He wept many times in his disappointment with his friends. I can be assured of that. And so Jesus wounded them in his sayings, and it was the same. His wounds were faithful. When he reprimanded Peter, when he reprimanded Mark and any of those, it was because he loved them so much, and he saw the error of their way. He saw the weakness that was creeping in, and he had to reprimand them, to correct them, which he hoped would bring them closer together. The ingredients for true friendship is a true love for one another's friends, whether it's men or whether it's women. So we remember that some of these friends that the apostle adopted, he really loved them. In some cases, he was able to call them friends. Call them his sons. And we all know Timothy. He was a young man. He didn't have the fire in him. He wanted to be a preacher. He wanted to be a stalwart, to go out and to be a David against the Goliath. He didn't have it in him. But he did have it in him. And the Apostle Paul, father, called him now his son. My father was known for writing letters. He wrote letters all over the world, to people all over the world. 2 o'clock in the morning, 1 o'clock in the morning, he'd be writing letters to people. And he wrote to a lot of the young brethren of his own ecclesia. And being the son that I was, and being a nosy son, I used to, when he'd gone to work, I used to read his letters. He left them on the side table, and I would read them. And I was a little bit annoyed with him, because a lot of the letters he addressed as, my dear son. And these were young brothers in the ecclesia. And he only had two sons in the flesh. But I didn't comprehend that. I didn't realize what he was doing. He was talking to these young brethren as my dear son. And so did brothers and sisters. I'm fascinated with this subject that maybe come next year when the new program, I shall go put myself down, if I'm accepted, and to speak on some more of his friends. I wanted to just mention Luke because he was, to me, he was a wonderful man. It's thought by many Bible students that Luke was a Samaritan. And I lean heavily on Harry Whittaker's writings. And he draws our attention to the fact that with only one exception, and that's in John 4, every New Testament reference to made to Samaria or to the Samaritan comes in the Luke's gospel. That's an interest to me to follow through on. And when we read Luke, when we read the gospel of Luke, we never hear his name mentioned. And so it comes under the, as most of us know, the only reference we find of him is when he uses that phrase, we did this, we did that, we did this. So he didn't leave his signature in the Acts of the Apostles or in his gospel to Luke. And there was another man who did the same thing. Mark was a brother who, as we know, he had contending with the Apostle Paul. I think the way of the truth was not easy for him. I said he had a lot of difficulties. And I know he'd be weeping at night sometime, disappointed, remembering what the Apostle Paul has said of him. And his life was not an easy one. But he doesn't leave his signature in the Gospel of Luke. Or does he? Let us go to interesting for 5 minutes, just interesting. To conclude with is when we go into Mark 14, we read this little incident in the life of Jesus. Mark 14 and at 51. Okay, so we all know where we are in the scene at this time recorded here is the agony in the garden and such like. They're coming to Jesus to take him. And as we know, to question him regarding his role at that time. And so here again is another thing. Can you imagine when Jesus needed his friends the most, they all forsook him and fled. There's not a worse insult to person. If I had a friend and I was a desperate, and he left me, I'd say, well, thanks a lot. You're not much of a friend to me. This is what it says here. And Jesus says, I was daily with you in the temple teaching, and you took me not, but the scriptures must be fulfilled. And they all, many of his disciples, Peter and John and Andrew, they fled. They didn't just walk away, they just ran away. Said, forget it, Jesus. We don't need your friendship at this time. And there followed him a certain young man having a linen cloth cast about his naked body, and the young man laid hold of him. And he left the linen cloth and fled from them naked. Most Bible commentaries imagine that is the signature of Mark and his gospel at that time. That is a man at that time. He left his linen cloth and fled from them. He was naked. He was naked physically. He was naked spiritually. And God could see the man for what he was. And Mark realized that. And so he's ashamed of himself. And so he fled. And when we go to Luke, we know he also leaves this signature for us. We know that many times he refers to his signatures when he says, we did this, we did that in this particular way. Now, where else would you think that Luke would leave his signature in the scriptures? Where else would he leave it? Well, naturally, he would leave it. He would leave it in his own gospel. And as we know. So, there is the, I'm just trying to find the quotation. Oh, I know what it was. You're all familiar with it. It is the parable of the Good Samaritan. Now, the Good Samaritan, you all know, you've learned it right from a child. And you know how it was that the one was traveling and he was attacked by robbers. And then, as we know, that the priest came along. The priest of all people should have seen that man who was injured and lonely, laying there by himself. He should have attended to him, but no, he bypassed on the other side. I've seen actually that. I've seen that happen in my own life with a certain, one of the clergy of that enact that whole thing in front of me on one occasion when I was a boy. And so we know with the one who came to his help, as we know, was a good Samaritan. I remember that, this Samaritan came with him, came to him, bound up his wounds. I think it recorded in chapter 10. Maybe somebody could. I just don't have that quotation down there regarding the Good Samaritan. Where's my wise brethren? Anybody know? Where do we find in Luke the parable of the Good Samaritan?
It's 10:25.
Pardon?
Chapter 10:25.
That's right. And that's what I got down here for a question. Thank you very much. Yeah, I took it down. Yeah, so in chapter 10 verse, we'll take it up at 31. And he said, by chance there came down a certain priest that way, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. And likewise a Levite. Likewise a Levite, when he was at that place, came and looked on him and passed him on the other side. A Levite. If anybody should have been there following the law, he should have done it. But a certain Samaritan. Who was a certain Samaritan? Luke was a certain Samaritan. And as he came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion on him and went to him. What did he do? He went to him, bound up his wounds, pouring in oil and wine, set him on his own beast and brought him to an inn and took care of him. And on the morrow when he departed, he took out 2 pence and gave them to the host and said, you take care of him and I will come back and I will repay you in that way. Now this Samaritan here who stopped to heal the man, he was no ordinary traveler. Ordinary travelers in those days didn't pack along a lot of medical equipment. But you see here, this individual, this Samaritan, he had equipment that he could bind up the wounds, he could pour it in oil and wine, and he knew how to dress his wounds and knew how to take care of it in that particular way. So just an interesting thought at that time. Now, I'm going to close right now. But I want to, when I was doing this work, I study, I should say, wasn't so much of work because I enjoyed it. I got to Onesimus. But before Onesimus, I got to Tychicus. And I love this story of Philemon, just the same as the way many of you, you in your studies have. But I haven't got the time to deal with it now. But I want to leave it with you. Most of the commentaries tell me that Tychicus and Onesimus were brothers in Christ later on. Now, what I can't figure out, and I've done Philemon a lot of time, what I can't figure out is, Onesimus would appear to be a wealthy citizen, and that way. His brother was Onesimus, but he was a slave. I can't figure out that family there. That surely if Onesimus had been a slave, surely his brother would have been a slave. Now, either I'm not focused and understanding it properly, but that's the way so far in my studies, and I'm sure some brother more educated spiritually than I am, come up with the idea that I couldn't figure it out, so I put Onesimus on a hold until next time, and somebody can tell me that. I remember that Onesimus, was a slave, and his brother was Tychicus. I love the name Tychicus, and so I wanted to do a study on him. So some brother comes up with that. I appreciate the help, and thank you for your patience this evening, and maybe in the near future, God willing, I may be able to study, if you're interested, study a few more friends with the Apostle Paul. Thank you very much.